Ah, I'm going to miss the dulcet tones of Dean Brown and Gord Wilson, who wrapped up another Sen season last night with the descriptions and accounts of Ottawa's 4-3 overtime win over the Toronto Maple Leafs. Josh Norris is the hero as he scores the overtime winner just 9 seconds into extra time, set up by Brady Tkachuk, who was the clown on the radio that said that Tkachuk shouldn't start overtime all the time. What a clown he is. Connor Brown had his NHL-leading fifth shorthanded goal. Nikita Zaitsev got another goal with a goalie in the net. He's going crazy these days. And a little hat tip too, Parker Kelly. NHL debut last night, hitting everything that moved and ends up scoring a goal. I'm sure just getting into a game was a dream come true for this guy. And then he ends up scoring a goal in that game as well. So congratulations to him. And it was a nice little bookend season for Ottawa. They began the season with a win over Toronto. They end the season with a win over Toronto. And collectively, I did the math. Toronto and Montreal are the two teams that Ottawa fans, you know, like to, you know, if you said which teams you want to beat the most.
Yeah.
Collectively, 19 games against those two opponents this year. Ottawa finished 10-9 versus Toronto and Montreal combined.
Yeah, and I would say, again, outside of that trip to Vancouver, JR, the god-awful time against Edmonton, that's a fun part for me. Nothing I love more than Montreal-Ottawa, but certainly Montreal or Ottawa-Toronto very close, and every one of the games was very competitive, tight, and like I said, for most Sens fans, and I guess the fact that all those games are in the Eastern time zone, JR, made for some pretty good TV all season long.
It did. It did. All right. Playoffs, of course, set to begin on Saturday. Still a few more regular season games to go, and still up for grabs. There's really one thing still up for grabs, and that is the Western Division title and first place overall. Colorado, if they beat LA tonight, will actually win the West and win the President's Trophy as well. So that's the one thing still up for grabs as we wrap up the regular season. To wrap up the Sen season, we are always pleased to be joined each and every weekday morning at this time by NBC's Pierre McGuire. Presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Jay, I'm doing fantastic. Sean, good morning to you. I have a quick question for you gentlemen, because I was watching Connor Brown last night pull away from Morgan Riley, his old teammate. And Morgan Riley's not a good skater. He's an elite skater. That was scary. So it brought to mind, and I wanted to ask you guys before we got going on the hockey talk, do you remember the movie where Meg Ryan was having some fun in a restaurant, and the lady sitting next to us, I'll have what she's having.
Having some fun, yes. That was, I believe, Sleepless in Seattle?
Correct, that would be correct.
She was having a massive orgasm. And
well,
it was,
I don't want
it
to
was,
say
it,
that on the air
well,
to the family show.
No, that's what it was.
Well,
but,
it was.
But it was Rob Reiner's mother, real mother in real life, that was the woman watching her, right?
Right, so I want to have what Connor Brown's having.
Okay.
Yeah. Massive orgasm.
I'm watching him last night.
Okay.
21 goals. The guy's been amazing. But to blow Morgan Riley away in a, you know, basically a track meet situation, a drag race, so to speak.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That wasn't a little bit good. That.
Yeah.
I mean, I know everybody's going to talk about the play that Tkachuk makes on Marner in overtime. I get that. That's all cool. But I'm telling you, little snippets of a thing. Connor Brown, if he brings it out next year, he's going 30-plus goals.
You know what? I thought Mark Brathwaite had a great comment last week, Pierre. He mentioned about going to the World Championship and how all of a sudden he showed up and it felt like, you know what, I actually belong. I know it's a watered-down team, but his confidence level, first of all, has been great in the second half. But it really feels like since he realized, you know what, I'm going to play for Team Canada. Now he plays against Toronto, but to your point, like he was the best player on the ice yesterday, and it just felt like he elevated. Can you maybe kind of speak to that point of guys going and playing these things when they never would have expected it?
For sure. I think it means a big deal. It matters a ton. And that's why when JR asked me about the potential for Jake Sanderson to go, I was like, if he can go, especially with Jack Capuano coaching the Americans, he should be going. I think you're onto something there. It's almost like guys, rookie players, and I went through this with Jimmy Pack, who I really respect so much. Mm-hmm. Jimmy was a very good player for us in Pittsburgh. When he got called up from Team Canada and got put right into the lineup, he had a chance to really grow his brand. But if we had called him up and sat him out, I'm not sure it would have worked out the same way, if you know what I mean. He got that confidence right away. He was sitting next to the guys. They were high-fiving him on the bench. Like, he felt like he belonged. He felt like he was part of it. And he was part of it. He was a big part of it, especially with the way we played a matchup game. So I think that does matter a lot. When you're in the group and you're accepted by the group, it makes a big difference.
I got my Meg Ryan movies mixed up, as many people reminded me on text right now. It was When Harry Met Sally.
Where Harry Met Sally, there you go.
Yes, not
but
to sleep.
That's why I asked the question, because I just wanted to make sure we were good.
So we, of course, spent the first couple hours in the show, Pierre, discussing not just the game, but you know, that within the context of how the Sens have played the last half of the season. I did the math. 3 months ago today was when they hit rock bottom, 2-12-1 in their first 15 games. They were dead in the water as far as the playoffs go. But since then, their last 41 games, they went 21-20, so they were above 500. Some people have said, you know, some people have said, hey, this is a, you know, a lot of fans are very optimistic, not even cautiously optimistic. They're over the moon about this team. But some people have said, as you know, your term is fool's gold. Do you have any thoughts whatsoever that this is anything other than the real deal? What Ottawa has done here in the last half of the year?
I'm going to stay with what I've been saying all along. They're trending the right way, and I think they're going to be an unbelievably difficult team to play against. The two teams in the Eastern Conference that are really trending the right way that didn't make the playoffs, the New York Rangers and the Ottawa Senators. And we'll see where it goes long term. But I am fully confident, and I think I told you this yesterday, I'd be very, very disappointed if they were not a legitimate contender for a playoff position next year, regardless as to what kind of divisional play we have. It's just trending in the right way. Younger players all maturing at the same time. Other guys coming. There'll be reinforcements coming. If they have a good summer in terms of, you know, professional acquisitions, talking about, you know, whether it's free agents or trades, this thing could turn really quick in a very positive way. Now, one of the big things they're going to have to deal with, and hopefully there's not a lot of white noise around it, is getting Brady Tkachuk's contract done. That's going to be an issue, and they can't allow that issue to deflect or take away from what the team is gearing up for. But I'm very, very optimistic about this team. And, JR, you know, for a long time I've been, because I liked the way they were pursuing it. The amateur side of things there has been fantastic. The pro side needs to get a little better in terms of recognition of team building exercise. But outside of that, I think they're really trending the right way.
I'm going to steal one of your favorite terms. We talked about some of the pressure going into next year, coach, general manager Matt Murray. But internally, in a positive way, from exit meetings to summertime to training camp, how important it is to all of a sudden for everybody involved in a good way to start putting some pressure and internal expectations of no more excuses. Not that we're rolling in to win the Stanley Cup, and not that you have to even talk about that, but start saying, okay, we've had a nice process here. There's no longer about feel-good wins and finishing strong. Let's hit the ground running here next October when the regular season starts.
I think that'd be a really wise way to pursue it. You don't put out the feelers that you're going to win the cup. You put out the feelers that there's a high level of expectation here, and if we don't hit it, then there's going to be a problem. But I commend the coaching staff there. This thing could have gone south in a hurry. The young players hanging in there, the leadership of Connor Brown, the leadership of Tkachuk, even though he's a young kid, and phenomenal. And let's remember, too, they got a lot of this done down the stretch against teams that were some urgent for points, and they did it without Thomas Chabot. And he's a superstar player in the league. He's not a little bit good. He's really good. I really admire what this team has done. And DJ Smith and his staff deserve a ton of credit keeping this thing together. They really do.
There are, you know, and this is going to be a real interesting summer. You mentioned the importance of the Tkachuk contract, and that is probably the, no, it's not probably, it is the biggest thing that Pierre Dorion has to do this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, do you think that he needs to do anything other than just keep the core of this together, or do you? Is there a sense of urgency regarding adding a piece, whether it's through the draft or through a trade or free agency, adding a piece to maybe accelerate what we've seen in the last half of this season?
I think they need to add a piece. That's why I said the professional side of things really needs to be looked at, the team-building exercise of adding the proper professional player, a guy who's established or two that are established. And that comes down to internally talking with your coaching staff. Okay, what are your needs as a coach? How can I address your needs to take this to the next step? And so, that again, it's internal communication. It's not a turf war. It's really proper and appropriate. I've been through these meetings. I think Sean probably has too. Every team does them differently. But I can tell you, one of the things that Craig Patrick did so well, and I refer back to it even though it was a long time ago, he delegated authority. He questioned what you needed, and then he would try to address it. And it was brilliant. You know, 1 year he goes out and gets Ronnie Francis, and he gets Alfie Samuelson, and he gets Grant Jennings. The next year he gets Shel Samuelson and Rick Tocchet. But when he got Shel Samuelson and Rick Tocchet, he traded away two future Hall of Famers in Paul Coffey and Mark Recchi. And most people outside the organization said, those guys got wiped out in that trade. There's no way Pittsburgh's going to defend and go back-to-back because they just traded Coffey and Recchi. But what people on the outside didn't know was that as a coaching staff, we knew how good Recchi and Coffey were, but they didn't address our needs going forward, and we needed to be more robust on the wings. Tockett brought that, and we needed a lot more defending with big-minute defending, and Shel Samuelson provided that, even though Paul was so great offensively. So sometimes you have to do things that the public says, oh, my gosh, what are they doing? And then all of a sudden it pays dividends. But that comes down to internal conversation, nobody having a turf war, and everybody singing from the same songbook when it's all said and done.
Issue with that deal, Pierre, and I will say for Pierre Dorion, full marks. He came up with the rebuild. Credit to him. He hired the amateur staff. Amateur drafting and development has been elite. I'll say the best in the National Hockey League. This past offseason, there were just miss after miss after miss to the point that, first of all, some of it got in the way, and some of it, like Dadanov and Murray, could be an issue going forward.
Yep.
You know, what internally do they have to end up doing differently? Because I would argue that, say, a Fleury and a Toffoli versus a Murray and Dadanov, you might be a playoff team. I mean, there were a lot of misses there that I would assume internally, as you do a deep dive, you're going to have to figure out how to correct that going forward, because that's a crucial part of what's going to bring this team to the next level.
And that's why I said what I said up the top. I said they're going to have to reevaluate how they do things at the professional level, because it wasn't done at the level they needed it to be done last summer. There's no question. I agree with you. And you just bring up those two players. It's very fair to say it.
Yeah.
And I think it's appropriate. And you're not being mean-spirited. You're just stating
No, absolutely. Yeah.
So you mentioned that a piece or two. If you could identify a position that you think is the most urgent for Pierre Dorion to fix with a piece, what would it be?
I'd love to see an established veteran center iceman come in, and I'd also like to see an established shutdown guy. You're not going to get a super elite shutdown guy. They're just not available. But I'd like to see something like that.
A shutdown defenseman?
Yes.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, and I think if you were to address those two things, your foot speed, so you do different evaluations. So one of the questions, how fast are you? You're fast enough to play in the league? The answer is yes. Are you big enough and robust and tough enough? The answer is probably yes. Do you have a good enough transition game? I think they do. Are your special teams getting better? Yeah, they are, and as the players mature, they're going to keep getting better. Are you deep enough with your prospect pool? Do you have to acquire draft picks when you make these deals, or do you need to just get established players? I think you're deep enough in your prospect pool. So you look at all these things, and finally you say, okay, what do we really need the most? Well, we probably could use a little more help down the middle, especially veteran presence help. If you're going to go with, let's just say for the sake of argument, Josh Norris is going to be your number one guy, you might need a little bit more to insulate him down the middle. And then it's pretty apparent that the one thing every team needs it, but if you don't have it hurts, and you need a shutdown guy that can stabilize a game, close out the last 2 to 3 minutes of a period, close out the last 2 to 3 minutes of a game, be an elite penalty kill. Those guys are hard to find, and they're valuable. They don't get points. They help you get points in the standings.
A name that's come up a lot, Pierre, and I hate to ever put you on the spot without kind of notifying before.
Okay.
At 33 years old, he is a local guy going into the final year of his deal. Cap hit is high, but the actual dollars out the door are $5 million. I think $1 million of that is a signing bonus, so I'd assume Ottawa would take $4 million. Would Claude Drew ever fit as far as, first of all, offensively? I know he's excellent on the faceoffs. Would you see him as a guy to go after behind and play behind a guy like Norris?
Yeah, that's a good name. And again, I just want to say one thing. The problem for Philadelphia, again, when you do these deep dives on teams, Sean Couturier is coming to the end of a 6-year deal. Claude Drew is coming to an end of an 8-year deal. That's at the end of next season for both of them. I can't see how Philadelphia is going to be able to keep both. It would be really, really difficult cap-wise. So that's something that maybe could be in play. I'm not saying that that's the player, but type of a play. And I just don't think it's fair for teams, especially, you know, Chuck Fletcher's going to have to do this business. I don't like to speculate that way, but that's something that definitely would merit serious consideration just based on contract difficulty that they're going to have in Philadelphia with the cap.
I'm assuming, though, probably at this point, I know he's been the captain, for cap reasons and age, they'd probably want to move on from Drew at this point, would they not?
Yeah, that's why I brought up those two contracts, exactly. So, but again, I don't know that.
No, for sure.
If I knew it, I would tell you. I just don't know it.
Okay, well, we'll have lots of time to continue to dismantle the Sens season with you over the coming days and weeks. Let's quickly turn to a couple of other hockey stories. Mm-hmm. The big one from yesterday is the Rangers firing their head coach and deciding to move on from David Quinn. A, are you surprised? And B, what type of a coach do you think they're going to go after?
I was surprised and I wasn't surprised. That was... I mean, I wasn't surprised because I think the expectation of the organization was they'd really compete for the playoffs. They did for a good portion of the season, and then they just had a real difficult finish to the season, especially being shut out twice by the Islanders down the stretch. That didn't sit well. So I think that that was where the problems probably began for the coaching staff. I also know internally they wanted a little bit more veteran presence on the bench. They liked what Jacques Martin brought to them in terms of defense and penalty killing. I think they wanted a little bit more experience on that bench when David started, and they weren't able to do that. So I think that's one of the things that hurt them. And I think in the exit interview, some of the older players probably said, we don't have, you know, enough horsepower behind the bench. And so you put all those together, that leads to probably, you know, replacement. But this is the most important part of it. He didn't sign a five-year deal like some people have reported. He signed a four-year deal. And so they didn't, I think the Rangers hierarchy didn't want to go into a situation where they start the season with David next year and then it doesn't go well, and then they have to replace him. And the prospect pool for coaches this summer is very strong. And I think that's one of the things that also led to this. I know it had to be very painful for Chris Drury to make that decision. I can tell you that right now. He and David Quinn are amazingly close friends. That had to be unbelievably painful.
Now I'm going to circle back to a Sens question because you just twigged me onto something. DJ Smith is going to be going into the final year of his contract year next year, and no one will argue, especially the finish of the season, is a good reflection on the coach. The players played hard, et cetera, et cetera. Is there any way the Sens can go into next season with him on the last year of his deal?
Well, it depends on what happens with the general manager. Where's Pierre Dorion's contract? You know, that's a big question that everybody has to ask, too. I think they have to be attached at the hip, the general manager and the coach.
And I believe they both have a year left.
That's
so,
what I'm saying. Yeah. So that's why.
So can they afford to have both of them going into the final year of their contract?
No, that's why I brought that up. I think the one thing that's really important when you run a team, if you're the ownership of a team, is have a clearly defined chain of command. You know, I've talked to you about this before. The owner owns, the president presides, the manager manages, and the coaches coach, the trainers train, and the players play. Once the chain of command gets broken, it becomes a fundamentally flawed organization, and then you got a problem. And so I think that now that you're in a situation where the GM has established himself in the amateur work in particular with his scouting staff, and the coach has established himself with his staff, those guys got to be attached at the hip. So if you do one contract, you got to do both contracts.
Would you, and I don't think they're making mega money, a couple of things here, would you both just tack on a year to them to make them safe? And at the same time, would you make sure that Mr. Mann is back in Belleville to send a bit of a signal that, hey, if things don't go well, we got a guy sitting there right now. A lot of teams have done that in the past. Bruce Cassidy, on staff to recognize, hey, Sheldon Keefe in Toronto, that, hey, we need something to happen here, and we're not afraid to put a little pressure on you.
Really smart. Really, really smart way to look at it, and I totally agree with that. And in terms of tacking on time, rather than do one, I'd probably do two, just saying for thanks if anything were to go awry. And it gives a little bit more stability to the entire organization because I do think a lot of good work has been done there. A lot of really good work has been done there in Ottawa. So, again, we'll see. But I'm really encouraged. I was watching that last night, and I don't usually cheer for teams. I just watch games, and I'm, you know, kind of cold about it. Okay, he's doing this or he's doing that. I'm watching that last night, and I was so happy to see how that ended for that team and for the hard work. And that's the Montreal Canadiens always had a thing, and our good friend Liam McGuire would tell you, they always had a thing. Win your last game on home ice. That was the Montreal Canadiens mantra for years and years and years. And usually that meant when you win your last game on home ice, chances are you're winning the Stanley Cup because you're doing it in the playoffs. There'll be no playoffs in Ottawa, but that was kind of like a playoff game. And I was so excited for that team and for their fans last night. I don't cheer for teams. I just watch. But I was really happy last night.
It also means you can go to the Shea and celebrate after a victory instead of going
home.
Back to the Rangers, Pierre, and the names come out yesterday, and I'm scrambling and thinking of Drury when he won a cup, and I'm connecting Bob Hartley. 7 years removed. You've got an owner super involved. By my account, I went through it. There's not a single Ranger player still on the roster for when John Tortorella is there. Would a lot of things point to where the franchise is at, the message that's been sent by the owner, that we're going to see a second tour of duty from Torts in New York?
There's one person on the roster who's at the top of the roster, the president and GM. He played for Torts.
Yeah.
He played for Torts in the 2010 Olympics when Torts was an assistant coach with Team USA in Vancouver, and he played for Torts with the New York Rangers. But there are other names, too. I think there'll be a pretty extensive search. I don't think it's going to be a quick decision, but yeah. John would be on that list for sure. Patrick Roy would probably be on that list because of the teammate factor with Chris Drury in Colorado where they won the Cup together.
Wow.
Gerard Gallant would be on that. I know.
Patrick Roy would be interesting.
Gerard Gallant would be on that list 100%. Rick Tocchet will be on that list. Mike Babcock will probably get an interview. I don't know how high up the list he would be, but I think Torch is probably right near the top of that list, just based on the information I've had in terms of how ownership views him.
Hmm. Very interesting.
Well, hey, before I get going, yes. I always do these things every morning. I always try to create a project for myself. And because we're near the end of the regular season, we're going to the playoffs, I do a thing that I learned from Scotty Bowman. It's called special teams quotient. So what you do is you add up the percentage of the power play and the penalty kill. And it gives you a number, a defined number. And usually, not always, but usually the teams that win the Stanley Cup or compete for the Cup, their special teams quotient is 105 or higher. 105 or higher.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, there are two teams at 110. Now, one's a little bit ahead of the other, but Carolina's at 110.8. That's number one in the league. Edmonton's at 110.3. Washington's at 108.8. Boston's at 107.9, Tampa's at 106.6, Colorado's right on the line, 105.8. And then if you look at the teams that are below, now these are all obviously playoff teams, but Vegas is at 104.6, Winnipeg's at 103.4, Pittsburgh's at 101, Islanders at 102.3, Toronto's at 98.6, and Montreal's at 97.7. So basically, what you see is you see Carolina and Edmonton, based on that formula, should be teams that go deep into the playoffs. Now, whether they do or not is another story, but that's where they are right now.
And Ottawa's at 94, right, to finish the year?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, historically, Pierre, like...
Over 100 has always been good, JR. That's kind of the...
100, if you're over 100, it's good. If you're at 105 or higher, JR, chances are you're really going deep into the playoffs and competing.
So, if you're 98 like the Leafs are, that's not a good thing.
That's not where you want to be.
No.
Why that power play down the stretch, those numbers they were throwing out guys last night is wow.
It went away. It was unbelievable. Yeah. It was unconscionable where it went.
Hard to believe with that amount of talent that you can't get a power play going. All right, Pierre, always appreciate the time and the insight, and we'll chat again tomorrow.
Thanks for the extended time. I just wanted to get that out there. Bye-bye.
Bye.